This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:35 in the morning. You're listening to The Morning Run with me, Shazana Mukhtar, Wong Xiaoning, and Philip C. It is Friday, the 10th of June. So we are turning our attention to what's happening down south this weekend. The Shangri-La Security Dialogue has become one of the most important independent forums for the exchange of views by international security policy decision makers in the Asia-Pacific region.
Fun fact, the event gets its name from the hotel where the conference is held in Singapore. Now, once a year, defense ministers, permanent heads of ministries and military chiefs of 28 states descend into the island state to discuss global security matters. Against the backdrop of a Russia-Ukraine war, China-US tensions, and a new slate of governments across Asia, all eyes will be on the dueling pair of speeches from U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin and China's Minister of National Defense Wei Fenghe.
And of course, everyone will be watching the contrast between competing visions for the Indo-Pacific of both superpowers. So will this summit simply be a talk shop where hollow blows are traded, or will substantive policy shifts take place?
So to help us better understand the geopolitical dynamics and tensions taking place in the region, we have on the line with us Chong Jae-in, Associate Professor at the Department of Political Science of the National University of Singapore. Jae-in, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us. Could you maybe start out by giving us the context of just how important this security summit is and why it's being closely watched by security observers around the world?
Thanks. Good morning for having me. So the Shangri-La Dialogue, as you mentioned, it's this annual dialogue to talk about security, largely focused on Asia. We've not had it over the past 2 years because of COVID. And of course, the world, as you know, has changed quite significantly. There's been the pandemic. There's been increased U.S.-China rivalry. There's also the conflict in Ukraine started by the Russian invasion. So there's a lot on the table to talk about. In particular, there will be an attempt, I suppose, to lay out visions for the region by both the U.S. and also the PRC. At the same time, I think there will also be Prime Minister Kishida from Japan talking about Japan's role in the region. And I believe President Volodymyr Zelensky is slated to give an online talk.
So help us understand, right? So we know that, you know, it's going to be a new, everyone's watching this event because there hasn't been one in the last 2 years. But what we have noticed is that, you know, there's a failure of China in securing a strategic pact in the Pacific Islands. So is this really an opportunity for the U.S. to reinforce its influence in the region?
So the Pacific Islands are, as you know, very far away from this Western Pacific where we're at. Now, the U.S., I think they will continue to try to reinforce their ties in the region. They will continue to try to encourage others to join what they see as their rules-based international order that supposedly promises more restraint, right, on major powers in exchange for other actors signing on. Now, at the same time, the PRC, who doesn't really have that much trust in this liberal international order that the U.S. is putting forward, will try to probably talk up, right, its role in security, talk up its role in development, and also why actors like the U.S., like Australia, which it doesn't see as organic to the region, should not have as big a role. So we're probably going to see friction along those fronts.
I wonder what then is the competing vision? You know, you say China's vision is more about progress, development. What is U.S.'s vision, and how different is it from China? Is it the same thing or just masked differently?
Well, they're both going to be talking about progress and development, but they will be couched, I think, somewhat differently. For the Chinese, it's going to be more about, you know, getting tangible and perhaps more immediate material benefits. That's what they seem to be focused on a lot more. The U.S., well, they will talk more about the security architecture. They'll talk more about rules of the road. They will probably talk more about things like, you know, having common standards for technology and things like that. So they will use a lot of the same language, but the direction in which they're pushing is somewhat different. So, the time horizon too will be somewhat different. The Chinese one will be a little bit more immediate, whereas the US one probably is more expansive and talks about setting up different ways that actors can interact and hopefully do so with less tension and with more convenience, more efficiency.
So we have seen a bunch of countries change leaders over the past year. We're seeing new leaders in Japan, in South Korea, in the Philippines, and Australia. Do you think that this change of leadership, how will this impact the dynamics for China and the US? Do you expect to see any changes?
So among U.S. allies, I don't see very much change. So the Australians, the Japanese, for them, their sort of view on the region, their view on ties with China is much larger than any particular leader. So I think those sorts of positions where there's more apprehension about Beijing are sort of baked in. Now, at the same time, we also see a change in leadership in the Philippines, for example, where the incoming president has talked about, rebuilding, going back to the sort of earlier effort to rebuild ties with the PRC that his predecessor had began with, but later moved away from a little bit. So in that sense, not all the leaders are the same. There's some leaders who have some different ideas that we want to try out. There are others who are more constrained by what their, publics generally think.
So, Jayan, you were contrasting the difference between China and the US. The US a bit more longer-term, security framework-driven, values-driven. China a bit more immediate, short-term, material-driven, progress-affected. So do you think as a result, China's zero-COVID policy has very much dented its influence in the region?
Right. So the zero-COVID policy is one where I think has slowed down China's growth. It has also slowed down China's interaction with the region. But that is very much because of domestic concerns for the PRC. There are several reasons for this. One is because they began on this sort of path of trusting their own vaccines a lot more. And so we also know that those vaccines have slightly lower efficacy. So there's concern that their healthcare system may be overwhelmed. One of the externalities, of course, will be economic growth, will be interaction with external actors. The other is because their leadership has staked so much on a COVID zero, it's going to be really difficult for them to suddenly move away from that kind of a position without looking like they're backtracking or have gotten something wrong. So these are largely domestic considerations complicating China's foreign policy outreach.
And let's stay on this topic about China's foreign policy. Do you think Taiwan will be discussed at all at the Shangri-La dialogue? And I mean, it continues to be a point of contention following President Biden's recent statements. Do you think U.S. policies could potentially push Beijing to take an even more aggressive stance towards Taiwan and make such overtures at this summit?
So Taiwan, I think, will come up. It's a point of contention. There will be people from Taiwan at the event. Now, I don't particularly think that what Biden says or doesn't say will aggravate the Chinese more than their current position. I mean, the current Chinese leadership under Xi Jinping has been very forward-leaning about how it wishes to bring Taiwan under its fold. It's certainly stepped up things like its coercive measures, the military flights near Taiwan. They've stepped up their military buildup. So, I mean, all that is, China can do all that by itself. It doesn't need some other actor to provoke it to behave one way or another. It's already set itself up on a trajectory where it wants to put more pressure on Taiwan.
And Jayan, this quick one. President Zelensky will be addressing the dialogue. Do you think he will be able to move hearts and change minds, as many Asia-Pacific states are actually independent and non-aligned at the moment?
So I think he's a very effective speaker. He seems to be able to do that to some degree. But the fact that in Asia, we're far away, we tend to see the conflict in Europe as being of not immediate concern. But I mean, there are certain things that he probably may highlight, things like increased food prices, increased oil prices, increased instability in the global economy. I mean, those are of concern to states in Asia. And I mean, let's not forget, I mean, this is a war of choice. Russia chose to invade. So I suppose what Volodymyr Zelensky will try to do is probably to try to get leaders in the region to put more pressure on Russia to perhaps pull back.
Jiayan, thanks very much for speaking to us. That was Chong Jiayan, Associate Professor in the Department of Political Science at the National University of Singapore, giving us a preview of what to expect at the Shangri-La Dialogue this weekend. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.